So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Good evening. Tonight, we will witness the first ever World Wrestling Federation draft. Vince McMahon will represent SmackDown. Ric Flair will represent Raw. In the interest of time, only 20 picks will actually be made live tonight. A lottery will be held immediately following Raw on WWF.com to determine placement of all other World Wrestling Federation performers. The result of tonight's historic draft becomes effective on next week's Raw. However, because of the Triple Threat WWF Championship match tonight, neither Triple H, Chris Jericho, nor Stephanie McMahon is eligible to be drafted. And due to a contractual clause, Stone Cold Steve Austin is not eligible to be drafted either. Mr. Austin is therefore declared a free agent, able to sign with either SmackDown or Raw. Thank you for your attention this evening, and best of luck to all the World Wrestling Federation superstars.
Welcome to Review Away. I'm John Pollock, and he is
Wei Teng.
Yeah.
Oh, you just nailed the microphone.
Sorry.
Woo. How are you doing?
Fuck.
Have you recovered from Raw Monday night?
No, not really. I didn't sleep very well, I'll be honest.
You didn't sleep well in the Ting compound?
No, I did not. It was too much shaky. She was shaking everywhere. I couldn't even pay attention.
I said on Monday night how I was hoping for a quiet Tuesday, and yes, did not get a crazy day of news like Monday. Mm-hmm. So I just woke up, and I knew I had to come in to do this show with you. And during the morning, my one task was watch Raw from 2002.
Yeah.
Easy enough day, right, Wei?
Sure.
Wake up, made some coffee, sat down, and I started watching the draft.
Sounds like a perfect day.
10 minutes in.
Yeah.
My player stops on the network. It's like, ah, that's annoying. I have to refresh it. Internet's down. Damn it. So I disconnect, reconnect. It's saying it's connected, but you get the yellow, the little yellow sign. You have a MacBook, so it doesn't apply to you.
The exclamation?
Yes. I've got that. So it's not connecting to the internet.
Yeah.
All right. Be calm, John. Just be calm. I reset my modem. Same problem. Reset my computer. Shut it down. There's no internet connection.
I've been there, man. Like, it's funny how something as stupid like that can make you feel like you can't even breathe. It's like not having water in the house.
It's suffocation. On top of the fact, I need to watch this. I thought we were going to be recording a lot earlier than we ended up recording this at. So, finally. Oh, and of course, I put my iPhone, I put the hotspot on. It won't connect on my laptop. It does connect onto my iPad. So then I start watching on my iPad.
Oh my God, that's got to kill your data.
Probably did. I watched about 30 minutes of it. And then my internet came back and I get it back onto my laptop. I'm like, okay.
Back in business.
Bit of a speed bump. We're back onto the draft. And then what the fuck is that? There's drilling going on in my building. And I'm not talking just drilling. I'm talking like my head shaking from this. This is the sound, okay, Wei, of what I listened to.
You recorded this.
For 2.5 hours.
Sounds like a Decepticon.
It won't stop.
I was losing it, Way. I had to get noise-canceling earphones to put on to try and get this sound out. Every side of my building, it was just, like, reverberating. I didn't know where this shit was coming from. I complained to our manager downstairs. I said, this is unacceptable without warning. You are killing my day. I'm supposed to be reviewing the draft from 2002. You inconsiderate fools. So I finally had to just get up. I finally finished the draft, and then I had to just get out of my house, and I went for a walk, and it is hot as hell outside. Mm-hmm. Still sweating. Then I came in.
Oh, my.
I'm just going to work every single day for the rest of my life, Way, because a day off, dude, Darren Young had it right. No days off.
Mm.
Paid off for him on Monday.
Oh, man, that's...
Didn't pay off for me on Tuesday.
Very sorry to hear that.
That was my road to today's edition of Review Away. I'm sure yours went much smoother than mine.
Yeah. I didn't have the best night's sleep, but I did sleep. Woke up, showered, watched the show, and now I'm here.
Oh, that was the other thing. I had to re-upload our Review Raw file like 8,000 times as well.
Man,
it's too much, Way. No, it's too much. I'm tapping.
I feel for you, man.
I'm falling apart.
I feel for you, man. You've been very busy.
I need to be more like Maria Kanellis. I need an assistant.
Oh, yes.
Oh, right. You know, from Impact, which you watch every week.
Yes,
you're familiar with Allie.
Right here on the Fight Network, of course. I mean, I'm a little concerned, John. I'm a little concerned that you're gonna, you know, dive off the deep end at some point, man. You gotta just maybe trim the fat, you know, out of your
Wouldn't it be more worrisome if you dove off the shallow end? I mean, that's where you could really do damage. The deep end,
you could.
That's where you're supposed to dive into.
True. Dive into the shallow end head first. Yes, I'm concerned about that.
That was always what you were warned in. No matter what color of badge you were going after, from yellow through, what was the top one? White? White badge, maybe?
I don't know.
I got up to green.
Oh, that's
Took
impressive.
Many tries. Yeah, I was awful at swimming
I think
lessons.
I got up to green as well.
Nice.
Anyway.
Nice.
I'm sorry to hear that. Hopefully this...
Enough with the apologies.
This review goes a little...
I don't want this to be a pity party.
Yeah. Hopefully this review goes a little bit smoother. Do we have any announcements to make?
You tell me, Way. About this show?
No, let's wait till next week. Coming up, some announcements. We will announce the new GM of Review Away.
Let's just say, here at LiveAudioWrestling.com, much like the words of Vince McMahon before a draft, it's time to shake things up.
Ah, yes.
It's going to be some shaking, and not just in my condominium either. So we can say that starting next week, me and Wei Ting will be reviewing SmackDown. We will review next week's big draft show, and then the following week, what a surprise. That's all I'm going to say.
Big surprise.
Big surprise. Might be a big, big egg that will hatch, and...
What?
A Guerrero will review SmackDown with us. No, that's not going to happen at all.
But, yeah, with that will come some schedule changes, in particular to this show.
Into my life.
Into John's life, yes. So, stay tuned for some of these announcements.
So, Raw, from March the 25th of 2002. This was a mere 8 days after WrestleMania 18. From the Rogers Center in Toronto, Ontario. The big draft, this had been much discussed at that point, finally separating the rosters and having distinct talent on Raw and SmackDown. This show was absent one Steve Austin, who had walked out after WrestleMania, and they would explain it during the body of the show how he would play into the draft. So, much like this upcoming draft, the original one, also missing arguably their top star.
Mm-hmm. This is Austin's first walkout.
This was his first walkout. He would have a much longer one a few months later, which you can go back and hear about just from a few weeks ago when we reviewed King of the Ring 2002. Way the ratings at this time. I mean, you look at 2002, and this feels like a safe enough period away from the true peak around a year ago after WrestleMania 17. That being, I think, the peak moment for many. My God, this show, and... I mean, they had a big number the prior week coming off of WrestleMania. This show, get a 5.41. 6.9 million viewers. Average.
Compared to today?
Yeah. The ratings aren't out for Monday's show yet.
But what's the average today, you'd say?
You're looking at about 3 million. And the main event did a 6.9, which is probably around high 7, if not 8 million viewers for that main event.
Jeez.
That is staggering. Almost staggering that you would want to separate this roster at this point, because numbers would go down with the brand split.
Well, if you can recall at this time, what do you think were the factors that led to the decision to split the brand?
It was sound thinking. They were already running separate crews at this point, and you had Austin and you had Rock. It did make sense that you would maybe want to separate these two. And also there was the fear of overexposure, of guys being on Raw and SmackDown. That's 4 hours a week,
yep.
And you limit that, and it makes each show special if you want to see your favorite guys. And it could also create new stars by creating new top spots, like with top spots on both shows.
And we were a year removed from the collapse of WCW. And
they wanted to recreate that.
At this point, you could say an overbloated roster of a lot of great talent.
Looking up at this past week's rating, Raw averaged about 3.1 million viewers on Monday night, roughly. Yeah. 3.2 was their high mark. Anyway, so we go back, and that was kind of the thinking at the time, was getting the roster separate. And I mean, there was a lot of interest in this. This was something really revolutionary for the WWF to embark on, something very ambitious. And this show would feature Vince McMahon as the co-owner of the WWE, running SmackDown, and Flair, the other co-owner, running Raw.
Mm-hmm.
But we started things off with Linda McMahon, who I guess had a role above all of them, back at WWF Studios, and looking like she was still in her comatose state from a year prior when she was in the wheelchair all the time. Like, she looked like a drone here.
That's just how she talks, you know. Linda, totally devoid of personality, the least charismatic of the McMahons, and I'm even including Shane's kids. Linda is far less charismatic than any of the McMahons. But I'd say with all the over-the-top, wacky GMs we've had since, I kind of like Linda. She's kind of got a Jack Tunney vibe that feels like a legitimate boss.
God, to have Jack Tunney and Linda McMahon as your two authority figures.
I don't hate that
idea. No, you're right. There is totally a place for the monotoned authority figure that is just the fucking... just
somebody who seems like they know something about business.
Yes. So Linda gives a message to the entire locker room. There will be 20 picks in total tonight, and then a draft lottery on WWF.com, and the brand split goes into effect with next week's Raw. She also notes that tonight's main event will feature Chris Jericho and Stephanie McMahon, along with undisputed champion Triple H, in a triple threat match for the title. Therefore, all three of them are exempt, because any one of those three could come out with the title, and the champion, the Undisputed and Women's Champion, will have the ability to go on both shows.
I took a step back at the announcement just right here that Stephanie was going to be competing for the WWF Championship at the end of this show.
I did not remember this either until I tuned in and had vague recollections. But that main event did an unbelievable audience. Mm-hmm. That was maybe the biggest draw on this show, even with the draft included. And then, noting Steve Austin is not eligible, and he is a free agent and will get to sign with the highest bidder. Could you have imagined the way this planned out if Hunter had lost in this main event and Hunter was one of the talents in the draft lottery on WWF.com as Chris Jericho ended up being?
Oh.
I had a hard time imagining Hunter would be privy to that.
Yeah, I can't imagine that.
And then we go into the ever-so-classic thorn in your eye,
mm-hmm.
which sounds really painful.
I think that's the imagery that they're trying to create.
I mean, you had to deal with a, what's it called?
A splinter. Yeah.
And this was driving you crazy over the weekend.
It was a thorn in my thumb.
And how did you remove it, Wei?
Well, our good friend Esther Lynn from MMA Fighting suggested that I use a credit card.
After first suggesting a knife, which you did not have.
I suggested a knife.
Oh.
Which I didn't have, but
You used a credit card and got the splinter out.
Yeah, you just simply drive the end of a edge of a credit card up against the grain of the splinter and help me out. Immediate release.
Amazing. Yeah. Visa. Don't leave home without it. Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler on commentary. We got a shot of WWF New York, and they plugged the triple threat, and that if Stephanie gets pinned tonight, she leaves the WWF, just as if her team of the Alliance lost at the Survivor Series 6 months ago, she would leave the company forever.
Mm.
High stakes for Stephanie McMahon.
Forever.
Yeah. Only one podium, Mr. Ting, so that's one change this year. Two podiums in 2016 that they would have to share. And we kicked off the draft show with Taz against Mr. Perfect. And they were plugging the hot album Forcible Entry coming out the next day.
Of all the WWE releases, I'd say that was probably one of my favorites. I think it featured such classics as the Finger 11...
Slow Chemical.
Kane theme. It had RVD's One of a Kind.
Uh-huh.
What else? Did it have the Edge Rob Zombie one?
Yes.
That they promoted on this show?
I can't remember. Yeah, that. Maybe not. Maybe. Whatever. No, they didn't.
But I'd say, like, of the era of theme, WWE-themed CDs, I thought that one stood out. What were some that stood out to you? Which volume stood out to you?
I'm just looking at it. Okay, this was our track listing, okay? March the 26th of 2002 from Columbia Records. The Game by Drowning Pool.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Legs by Kid Rock.
Yeah, okay.
Wait.
Or Stacey Keibler, of course.
Yep. Young Grows Old by Creed, which would be the theme song for their Backlash pay-per-view that month after.
Love Creed.
Don't mock me for my...
Hey, you know what? In wrestling, they really work. Like, I'm not even joking. I think
Creed's greatest, I think, moments came through the WWF.
Fuck, my desire, it's the only time I would ever sit down and, like, actually enjoy a Creed song is when you put wrestling... on top of it.
Do you think less of me that I went to two Creed concerts?
No. You're probably...
A little.
You're probably, like, you know, thinking of wrestling.
Not really. I think the first concert I went to them, I'm pretty sure... I wonder if it preceded those My Desire videos or not. Maybe not. You know what? They didn't, because they definitely played My Sacrifice. Yeah. Okay. Glass Shatters by Disturbed. Roll.
Oh, that was the Austin...
Yeah.
The heel...
I think that worked with Disturbed.
Sure.
When they added the vocals to his theme. Roland, Dead Man Remix, Limp Bizkit. Whatever, Our Lady Peace, a song they will not play any longer. Oh, You Were Right, Never Gonna Stop, by Rob Zombie. One of a Kind by Breaking Point. The Beautiful People, WWF Remix, Marilyn Manson. The upcoming Raw theme, Across the Nation, by The Union Underground. Break the Walls Down by Seven Dust, another group I saw live.
Oh, I thought that one sucked. You can't fuck with that original Jericho theme.
Oh, this one I did not like. Turn the Tables by Saliva.
Okay.
The Dudley's theme?
That was an updated version of the generic Dudley's theme. I thought it was pretty good.
Live for the Moment by Monster Magnet. That was Lita's theme.
Okay.
For a time. End of Everything by Stereo Mud.
You know which one I really liked was the Matt Hardy theme by Monster Magnet.
That was the Monster Magnet one, I think.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
Yeah, that was, I was thinking of another song. Ride of Your Life by Neurotica, which was the King of the Ring theme. Just Another Victim by Cypress Hill. That was okay. No Chance by Dope. I enjoyed Dope. They did Rhino's theme in ECW.
I don't know that one. Whose song is that? No Chance. Oh. Is that the
Is it a remix of Vince's?
It has to be.
This isn't going to have sound because the microphone's... look at the fucking graphic, though. It's this guy pointing a gun at you.
Okay.
Okay, and there's one more. I know Way's done with these songs. The last one is Love, Fury, Passion, Energy by Boy Hits Car. I think that was the Lita song that she used.
Okay.
All right. Forcible Entry.
I think
awful kinda, name of a album. Yeah. Awful.
Yeah. But I love the idea of, you know, taking these mainstream bands and telling them to make versions of your generic stock music WWE entrance themes.
They never went the rap hip-hop avenue again after Aggression.
No. I thought that was a good idea, too, and I think it'd be a great idea now, considering, you know, WWE's or wrestling's kind of popularity in rap circles. But
could get Wale. Pusha T.
Wale's doing them for free. Well, you don't even have to pay Wale to do it. But I guess some of them didn't really translate as well as actual themes.
Yeah, it's tough to take a regular song and apply it as a wrestling theme. I mean, you need something big off the top.
But I thought a lot of these worked.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a collaboration for that reason that they could incorporate some of these. You want to have that big start to a wrestling theme that signifies who it is.
Thus the SmackDown remix of Beautiful People.
So Taz and Mr. Perfect is where we start. Perfect gets on the mic and says he is the perfect pick. Apparently not. He did not make the top 20, nor did Taz. Perfect Plex and Taz grabbed the bottom rope. There was this weird Irish whip transition where they seemed to get, it was just kind of an awkward attempt at one. And then Taz just locked on the Taz mission and won this in a minute 52. And Taz cuts a promo saying that the perfect pick is just another victim.
Not much of a match here, but a pleasant surprise seeing Mr. Perfect a part of this roster. Still received a huge pop, mainly riding on the nostalgia. And I think still, you know, at this time, somebody who was in great shape and was able to really go after re-debuting at the Rumble.
Which was the high point of his return. They did nothing with him after that Rumble. He had great appearance, Final Four, and then boom, he was like on Sunday Night Heat at Mania, and this was his role, losing in a minute 52.
But, you know, it was really incredible to see him have this run be so over, even on a show like this, considering how little he meant without the gimmick in WCW.
Yeah, he would only last a few more months after that plane ride deal in May. But that he was the kind of guy you would love to have there in the locker room, working with younger guys, especially as you're splitting them off and trying to get a lot of guys up and running. Like Brock, for instance. Yeah, you're right. Well, they were working things out on a plane, driving into the door. Ric Flair and Arn Anderson are showing in the Raw War Room. The Raw is War Room. And Vince has the first pick tonight, so they're making their plan B, C, D, E, and F. And we go to Vince's War Room, and he's alone with his glasses on. He gets up and is headed to the ring to make his first pick, and we see a portfolio with Kurt Angle's 8x10 in it as he is doing his research.
Needs to be reminded.
This is kind of the same prep that you would see Jerry Lawler start to do during the co-branded pay-per-views, learning who was on SmackDown at the time, with portfolios and 8x10s of each guy. Vince comes out, he won the coin toss, and he announces the number one overall pick is The Rock. And everyone is seated in the locker room, and this was not one of those cases where the stars were exempt. Everyone eligible for the draft was in this room, including Hogan and Rock. The only guys not there were Hunter, Jericho, and Stephanie, who were not eligible. And Austin, of course. They showed graphic boards for all of the draft picks and their stats. And Rock comes out. Vince says that there's going to be new rules on SmackDown. He says that you're never going to put your hands on me again. No more mentioning of your foot going up somebody's candy ass. And no more saying it doesn't matter. The crowd starts chanting, asshole, and Vince says not to call his number one pick that. He says he made Hogan, and he made Rock, too. And he says that he brought him into this world, and he can take you out of it, in the words of a well-known comedian. So, I wonder
what comedian?
Who that well-known comedian would be in 2002 that may be a regrettable choice in 2016.
Now, I'm telling you, you are going to try as hard as you can. And you're going to do it because I said so. I am your father. I brought you in this world, and I'll take you out.
I don't know.
Bill Cosby.
Oh, okay.
So Rock then cuts a promo. He notes this is his final Raw ever until June. And he brings up winning the title on Raw, making the Rock and Saw connection on Raw, putting Vince's face into Rikishi's ass, and states no one made the Rock, not even his parents' genitalia, which is incorrect.
You don't know that.
Well,
maybe he was artificially inseminated.
Well, he said the people made the Rock, which Ross says absolutely correct. And he plugs Penn State, playing at Beaver Stadium, and he starts the We Are Penn State chant, and then he changed it so that half the building would yell, You are, and the other half would yell, an asshole. And he gets the entire arena to chant this. They were so loud. They drove Vince to leave to the back. They continued this chant all night. I'm sure this trickled over to a few more TVs. When I first heard this, I thought this chant was going to follow Vince like what? This crowd was so into this chant. It was deafening.
Yeah, I think it's actually a very ambitious chant to try to start. And somebody only with the commanding presence of The Rock and few other people, I think, would be able to lead.
He was excellent.
Rock was great here. You know, and also great was Vince, who I think was near his prime in terms of a performer here. Just selling the reaction to the chant really well. His facial expressions were just top-notch. Funny, equal parts funny, and, you know, just made you dislike the guy, but want to watch him. I thought he was tremendous all show.
There was a sign in the crowd, Shane O'Mac, please come back. And then Ric Flair is out for his number one pick. And to combat The Rock, he chooses The Undertaker. Despite their differences, he says, after The Undertaker attacked his son and fought him at WrestleMania. And Undertaker is pissed.
There's a David Flair angle?
Before it, yeah. Undertaker went to OVW and beat the shit out of David Flair in the buildup. Taker's pissed backstage. He throws a chair. Just to date things, the graphic comes up 10-0 at WrestleMania. Man, we're old.
Yeah. It was very much, the show was very much presented like, you know, Flair was the babyface team. Vince was the heel.
But was
team.
An awful, not, I won't say awful, but it was like throughout the night, as every pick went through, Jim Ross was just saying, I don't understand his draft strategy. Like, what is Flair doing? It was almost like this guy was just.
But what strategy did either man have?
Vince had an awesome roster. Rick did not.
Well, that's arguable. I mean,
okay, we will go over the list at the end. And I think when you hear them all compared to one another, it was a decisive. We had a distinction between both brands. Listen, good and bad was probably not the aim.
To Ric Flair, I could see him seeing the NWO or as somebody more valuable than, you know, Kurt Angle or Chris Benoit at the time. Certainly.
So Vince is also furious backstage, and Kurt walks in, and he's mad he wasn't chosen first. Vince says that he threw Ric Flair a swerve, and now Flair has done the same, which Jim Ross probably had to bite his tongue, asking, what is a swerve? Taker walks in. He's pissed that Flair picked him. And Vince doesn't know why he did. Why would he pick you? I don't know. Says he will make this right, and Taker tells him, you better keep your word. Angle, then we get a graphic from SmackDown the prior week where Angle had attacked Edge with the referee out and allowed Booker T to beat Edge while Christian interfered and led to Regal hitting DDP with brass knucks on SmackDown and lost that match. If you can make sense of that, it led to a tag match on Raw.
Just like the when the invasion started, I felt like a lot was happening in that they had current storylines that were going on while they needed to kind of put this draft in the middle of it all. Sometimes, you know, abruptly ending current storylines. But the whole show kind of felt it a little disjointed in that they had these things going on leading up to Backlash, yet had to go through this big change to the entire product at the same time.
So Edge, fresh off his shampoo commercial, is teaming with Diamond Dallas Page to take on Christian and Booker T, the shampoo advertisement finalist. And Lawler says that he's going to be logging into WWF.com later to find out the lottery picks.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt
draft
that's
lottery.
True. Remember, this was also in 2002, where not as easy to access WWF.com if you're on the road.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yes.
Yeah. You would have to... we had cable internet back then, didn't we?
Cable internet existed, but not smartphones.
No.
There was a sign in the crowd, you're not undisputed champion without the NWA world title. A furious fan at the state of today's world title scene. Austin, they also note, had a clause in his contract making himself a free agent. This is all being discussed as the match goes on. Christian snapped Paige's neck on the top rope, voided a scissors kick, hits Booker with a diamond cutter, and then Christian makes the save. Unprettier is hit the Paige. Edge comes in with a spinning heel kick to Christian, and then Booker recovers, hits the scissors kick, and pins DDP at 2:13. This was kind of the era of these matches that they were just racing through.
Especially on a show like this when you had so much to get through.
Yeah, this was probably even more so, the fast-paced matches. But
yeah.
These were kind of really quick, nothing to these fast matches.
And, you know, I always like going through these old reviews just to be reminded of guys on the roster that I completely forgot were even a part of it. And in this match, that was DDP, who at this point, really just a mid-carder babyface coming off the invasion. His value, I thought, was really hurt after the Stalker angle. So he didn't make the top 20.
Who would think that 14 years later, amongst Edge, DDP, Christian, and Booker T, if I were to say pick one guy, way, 14 years from now that will have a match at WrestleMania, it would be DDP in the Battle Royal.
Oh, sure.
Angle is in the back with Vince, going over all of his credentials of why he should be picked. Vince is worried that Flair is going to draft his NWO. And then McMahon announces that his second pick is Kurt Angle. And Angle hugs him, but then says, I should have been drafted first.
Angle is really funny, so entertaining. And I think anytime we watch Angle on one of these old shows, we think about what could have been, how much he would have done for business if he was taken seriously. But he's also so entertaining.
He's great in this role. That was the biggest problem for him, I feel.
Yeah, that it was like, it's tough to complain about somebody who's so good at doing this, yet, you know, we know. And they did try him as a serious guy during the invasion after 9/11, but he quickly...
And then they flipped them back and forth so much. I think the same can be said for Austin in that 2001 period. You go back and watch it, he was super entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But business suggested otherwise, at least that it was stronger when this guy was not doing comedy.
Yeah.
But he was also dealing with that back injury at the time, and that was a real reason for the source of comedy and changing himself to be in that heel character. However, I felt both, I mean, certainly entertaining personalities. Ric Flair comes out and says he's going to work as diligently as possible to sign Steve Austin, and he announces he is drafting the NWO. Who are not... We said everyone was in that room. The NWO was not amongst the draft picks.
I guess I saw Hogan, but...
Hogan was there, but they had split at this time. So the NWO, I guess they were playing their, hey, we're the anti-authority group card tonight, so we're not lumped with everyone.
So the NWO gets to be picked as a collective.
Yes, which, again, we don't know how that works for this year's draft for something like the New Day, for instance.
Yeah, because on the other hand, you had the Dudley Boys and other tag teams that were to be drafted individually... Yet, I guess it was some contract clause.
Maybe this means the Social Outcasts will be intact after the draft.
Maybe they don't have that power in their contract.
This consisted at the time of Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and the prior SmackDown they had added Sean Waltman. So that was the threesome that made up the NWO at this point. And boy, was it about to grow with additions like The Big Show. Yeah. Vince is furious backstage. He says he's going to sign Austin. Angle says... There is someone who has not been around for a while, but he's coming back soon, and he's coming back better than ever. And Angle whispers into Vince's ear, and Vince announces with his next pick, he is drafting Chris Benoit.
Mm-hmm.
This was a big surprise, because I don't think anyone even knew what the status of Benoit would be, because he had been out, and he wasn't even coming back till June, and would come back on Raw, which just, in a nutshell, explains to you this brand extension.
Yeah. It also showed you what they thought of Chris Benoit and how they wanted to use this type of draft, a ranked draft, to really promote somebody like him and keep him in people's consciousness.
I would argue that in the entire year he was gone, and including his return, which was, I thought, done terrible, this was the best thing they did for him during that time. This positioned him above Hogan.
Yeah.
This put him amongst the top guys in the company.
Mm-hmm.
And... just being picked here, I think that was an incredible bit of momentum they put behind this guy. And then his return, I mean, the Austin stuff threw a lot of stuff into the air, and he came back to Raw, then got moved to SmackDown. It was handled very poorly, but I thought here they were 3 months out from his return, telling you this guy's coming back as a main eventer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it felt like here.
Mm-hmm. Just a small touch that they also showed on. You remember, like, the old Titantron? during this time how there were two vertical screens.
The side panels.
I love that they put lists for Raw and SmackDown, one on each side, showing off the number of drafts and the list of drafted names. I thought it was a great use of those side panels.
And this is where Ross noted that, "I don't understand Flair's draft strategy with The Undertaker and the NWO so far on his roster." With Sean Waltman.
Saying those guys don't belong?
That's what Ross said. He didn't give context to the statement.
The Undertaker, I could see, and I could see the NWO.
I think the storyline was that here he has all these problems with the Undertaker, and he was the one, Vince was saying, "I'm going to inject poison."
Right.
And Flair was the one fighting him on that.
Gotcha.
So here he's drafting the same poison he was fighting.
He's drafting all the heels that he should
He has problems with. Whereas the viewer at home was like, "Why the hell are these guys being drafted?" Because Taker in 2002, very different from the future version of The Undertaker and what he was going to be adding. So the NWO shows up in Ric Flair's room and tells Flair that Vince brought them in and Flair cannot tell them what to do. Flair says that they are poison, but they work for him now. And they're just stating, "We still work for Vince." And Flair then announces his next pick is Kane. Benoit and Kane, those were your number three overall picks.
Again, Kane, I think, was another guy that they had high hopes for as a single star at this time.
NWO is not happy with this pick, and they walk off. Trish Stratus took on Ivory, and this is where we got our sponsors, including the rapper Custom with his new album. Do you remember Custom?
No, I do not.
Not many do.
It's rare that a one single rapper gets...
it was his album they were pushing. But maybe he purchased time himself. It was a custom purchase.
Yes.
Puppies Chant came out immediately for these two women. There were chops in the corner by Trish, missed with a reverse cross off the middle turnbuckle, and then a handstand into the Hurricane Rana and the Stratus faction, and pinned Ivory in 2 minutes and 11 seconds.
Very quick TV match, clean win. I thought Trish was, you know, at this point, a pretty over baby face, especially in front of this crowd who I thought were very hot.
There was a locker room shot, and then Vince comes out to the podium, more of the asshole chants, and he drafts Hulk Hogan as the production music plays, and he's playing the air guitar, cupping his ear, and posing, mocking Hogan. And then we got a very creepily voiced ad for the upcoming Divas Swimsuit magazine.
It's the one moment you've desperately been waiting for. Your wildest dreams come true. The Divas are back, and hotter than ever. Divas 2002 Swimsuit Issue, coming April 2nd to newsstands everywhere.
This just felt very weird.
Who is the voice guy? Do we know? Is he anyone of note? But he's all over there.
I don't know
his name. That material.
I don't. I'm not sure. Ric Flair is out next. His fourth pick is the Intercontinental Champion, Rob Van Dam. So that means he gets the title. And Vince is furious. He doesn't understand the concept this late into the draft and how things work. I think he was believing that he would just get everyone. It's one pick back and forth, and yet he's upset at everyone that Flair gets, as if like everyone would be available to him. And Flair would just start his draft with Perry Saturn, I guess, and work backwards. Who was the last overall draft lottery pick, by the way.
Okay.
And he says that Van Dam has potential, but he's really upset because he's got the title. Not because of this guy, this is the fucking title. Angle says, "Well, just book me in a match and I'll go get the title and we'll bring it to SmackDown." Again, Vince, very poor prep work, you got the sense of. He suddenly, a light goes off here and he books the match and says maybe Kurt should have been drafted number one. Hogan is with Rock in his locker room. They shake hands. They are now mutual friends after Hogan ran him with a semi-truck just a month ago. But now they're best friends, and they're going to work together. And Hogan proposes a handicap match against the entire NWO for revenge last week, when they put Rock through a table and Waltman hit Hogan with a chair to the head, and they each do the other's catchphrase.
A fun pairing together riding off of the success of WrestleMania 18.
Vince comes out, his fifth pick, our tag team champions Billy and Chuck, and they show them in the locker room, and Rico comes with them.
Yeah, like his managers.
So Rico was part of the Billy and Chuck package, but Lita was not part of the Hardys.
Well, I guess Lita's a wrestler, but Rico wrestled too, yep, individually. I don't know.
We needed a handbook ahead of time. They should have made that available on WWE.com, all the rules.
They do mention that because they are the tag team champions, they get to be drafted together.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess Rico is managing the champion, so that's how he is. Well, too much.
Were the tag champs moving back and forth as well at the time?
No. No.
Oh, there. So the tag division. Or
it was just the world champion and the women's champion at the start that could go back and forth. The NWO is walking backstage, and apparently this match was made in about 2 minutes. They were already walking to the ring for this match that Hogan just came up with 2 minutes prior.
Yeah.
There was a Lugs replay of Hogan on SmackDown hitting a leg drop and X-Pac showing up, joining the NWO, and busting open Hogan with a chair. So we had The Rock and Hogan against Nash, Hall, and X-Pac. Hogan and Waltman started, and X-Pac was sent to the floor to lots of cheers. Hall tossed a toothpick at Hogan and then tagged Nash in, and Hogan had a bandage over his right eye. Then they had the ticker on the bottom with all the picks. I really like that.
I really did, too.
I hope that's incorporated.
Very much a sports type of presentation.
This was one of Kevin Nash's 8 matches in 2002. A rarity.
I know he was coming off of an injury. That's why he didn't...
He was in between injuries.
But, man, you could definitely tell in this match, working, I'd say, in an even more limited style than what we're used to seeing from Nash. Hogan was more mobile than Nash here.
Hogan and Hall do a double clothesline spot, leads to a hot tag to The Rock, and he comes in with Nash, hits a flying forearm, DDT to Hall, kip up, knocking X-Pac to the floor, then hits Nash with a Rock Bottom, tags in Hogan for the leg drop, but as Rock hits a spinebuster to Hall, X-Pac makes the save off the leg drop. Kane's music goes off as X-Pac has got his nunchucks out, and Kane clotheslines X-Pac to the floor, attacks Scott Hall and Nash. There's a big boot delivered to Kevin Nash, and the bell is called for the DQ. Hall ends up getting chokeslammed. X-Pac uses a chair shot to the back of Kane, and then the babyfaces all fight them off, with Hall taking a chokeslam by Kane. And then the announcement is made that the winners by disqualification are the NWO and Hulk Hogan's face. You could have just told him that the pregnancy test came back and you are the father. That was his reaction to this. Who else would have won this match? You guys had the guy run in and attack. Obviously, you were disqualified. But Hogan was just aghast that their team had been disqualified.
Well, X-Pac did pull out nunchucks in the middle of the match.
Okay. But didn't use them. Didn't get to use them.
I found that ridiculous. The match isn't even called, and this dude pulls out nunchucks.
You can't disqualify based on intent. You have to disqualify based on action.
I see. Well, a crowd really hot for the teaming of Hogan and Rock.
This crowd was really into this.
Yeah. I think the star power on this show was massive. And considering it was a show with a lot of high stakes, you could understand why this crowd was as loud as they were. I thought X-Pac was a good addition and a necessary addition for the NWO at this time.
He got a lot of criticism, though, because he leapfrogged so many guys that were more over on the roster into this position with the NWO.
But I feel like the NWO, like...
He is a fit, though.
He's a much better fit. He's part of the clique. He was in the original NWO. And, considering Nash couldn't work, he was definitely immediately became the workhorse of the group.
Yeah, they did need that figure. Vince walks into Flair's war room. Did I already go over this? No. And he says he stole The Undertaker, stole the NWO, and thinks that Flair sent Kane out there into the ring. Flair says, I don't have to explain anything to you anymore, and the Raw brand will ride on forever without Vince McMahon. And then Flair goes to make his next pick and drafts Booker T. So Vince drafts Edge. Flair picks Big Show. And then Vince, with the bullet in his chamber, picks Rikishi. Fucking Rikishi.
He was over at the time, though. I mean, it was definitely on a decline, but still, I would say, considered... I think Vince made its dumber move after this.
Flair says, maybe we'll see Rikishi sit that big fat ass on Vince's face again. Then, just to kind of... To me, the exclamation mark behind the Rikishi pick, immediately after, the Hardys come out, who have not been drafted yet.
But the Hardys were like a tag team, you know? They didn't have singles runs yet.
Would you have drafted Rikishi?
Maybe at the time, yeah.
The Hardys and Lita were in their glow-in-the-dark jackets and then left them at the entrance as they came out. It was Billy with Chuck and Rico in his corner against Jeff Hardy with Matt and Lita. Rico had interfered on SmackDown, allowing Billy to beat Jeff. We had seen like four different match highlights from SmackDown, all with run-ins setting up matches here on Raw. There was a tornado DDT that Jeff hit without using the ropes, climbed up, knocked Chuck off the apron. Matt then went after Chuck. Jeff missed with a swanton. Rico had the belt, and he turned around on the floor. Lita came off the apron with a Hurricane Rana, and Jeff used an O'Connor roll to pin Billy in a minute 52. Our second minute 52 match of the night, by the way.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that.
That's why I'm here.
There's a really ugly Hurricane Rana from Lita off the apron here. Barely catching Rico. Turned out okay. This was no final deletion.
Then, one of the many WWE campaigns they had, I Was There, where they have various fans remembering iconic moments, such as Vince McMahon bringing back the NWO. One of those iconic moments that happened 5 weeks ago. And the tagline, the moments are waiting.
Or WrestleMania 18, which was...
8 days before.
8 days before. Which we were actually there for.
I was there. There's nothing wrong with this. I'm just being snarky. Then we go back and Jim Ross once again updating us on Ric Flair's strategy. An unusual job of draft strategy by Ric Flair. Flair then makes his pick of Bubba Ray Dudley and prefaces it by saying he is trying to draft the most dominant tag team in the company, to which Vince says, fuck you, I'm drafting D-Von. And we get the reaction of the two in the locker room. They're pissed. Then they shake hands and hug. The best part of this was Test pretending to cry behind them and Tommy Dreamer's jaw hitting the floor saying, wow.
At what point do you think they were told that they were going to be split up?
Honestly, yeah. It would not surprise me if it was that day.
Yeah.
They were trying to keep everything super quiet, to the point that Lance Storm has done a number of interviews that they left the arena that night and wanting to make their travel plans for next week and who they ride with, they were not told what brand they were on. They were told, go on the website.
And I wonder if that included the Hardys.
Of course it would have. Yes, wow. It would have. The Hardys were not drafted on this show, which to me was...
Lita was, though.
Lita was, yeah. Also not drafted yet, after Vince put up this huge stink about having the titles, European champion William Regal taking on Rikishi for the European title. However, the match was not started because Brock Lesnar appeared. I totally forgot about this guy.
Me too.
He runs in, attacks Rikishi with a clothesline, slam, and then hits an F5 as Jim Ross calls Paul Heyman a hemorrhoid on the face of life. I hope that whoever has a hemorrhoid on their face has proper health care, because that just sounds awful. And then we go to Jazz, the women's champion, who was so important that she was booked in WWF New York on this night, and says, I'm just waiting to see where the divas end up, because not one diva had been selected yet. And then says, quote,
and if the people want to call me a bitch, fine. But they have to learn is that the WWF women's champion, I'll be the only bitch appearing on both shows.
If the people want to call me a bitch, fine. I'll be the only bitch appearing on both shows. So we had a much different vernacular for the divisions and what we called the women in 2002 versus 2016. And I would venture to guess that a woman will be chosen in the top 20 this time around. Actually, there was one pick.
I would hope so. I think it would send a great message. Going back to the Brock Lesnar initial appearances, though, this was his second week in the company on the main roster, and he would he would debut by doing these run-ins and attacking people. And tonight, on this show, he F5'd Rikishi. It was a very young-looking Brock Lesnar, but I thought that these were quite effective and introduced him quite well as sort of this surprise entrant.
And here we are, 14 years ago, taking out Samoans.
Oh, right.
With dyed blonde hair.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
So, afterwards, Jim Ross thanks Jazz for her directness. And then Vince comes out, and he selects Brock Lesnar. However, this fool is not on the clock. It's Ric Flair's pick.
That's very funny.
This was dumb. Flair comes out and informs him, this is not your pick. And Vince just essentially wants to turn this into like a snake draft. He just says,
you get two picks.
You get two picks. I'm taking Lesnar. And Flair says, you're not changing the rules. And Flair picks Brock Lesnar.
You know, and again, something like this, I think, is an argument for an ordered traditional draft. A great way to push a no-name like Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, and I think Lesnar could have gone a lot higher in this and gotten kind of that, here was this blue chip, this blue chipper, but this was not a, I mean, it would have been much worse if he had been left for
the draft lottery.
He was, you know, a prominent guy, and both GMs wanted him. So I think that was a good positioning of him as well.
I think his debut, you know, treated far better than, say, somebody like Batista.
So Vince has to combat the Lesnar swerve and picks Mark Henry because he shows potential.
Ugh.
Flair then picks European champion William Regal. So Vince chooses hardcore champion, or he states... We're going to bring this entire division to our brand, the Hardcore Division. And he picks Maven.
Yeah.
What about me? What about Maven? Who had actually dropped the title to Raven the next night at the SmackDown tapings.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, these made sense because they were essentially for the belts.
I wanted to go back and watch that match just to hear the announcers call Maven and Raven together. Mm. How confusing would that be? Mm-hmm. Flair's final pick is Lita. And Vince mocks him for choosing a woman and says Flair only chose him because he's a lascivious pig and he's going to turn Raw into a cesspool. And he mentions this week's SmackDown is the final dual brand show and that if the Raw guys provoke the SmackDown guys, they're going to get beat up. And Flair leads the crowd in one more "You are an asshole" chant. And then they throw everyone to the draft lottery for WWF.com afterwards.
I thought Flair and Vince both had really good chemistry with one another, and I thought both performed very well on this show.
And just think that this whole ownership divide would end within one episode of Raw in June.
Oh, yeah, is that right? I forget.
That was the night Austin was gone. Vince came out, said, everything's on the line tonight, and he made a match with Ric Flair. He won the match, and he had control of the whole company on one night in June.
Hmm.
Very bizarre. Rob Van Dam and Kurt Angle was next for the Intercontinental title with the story that Angle wanted to take the title to SmackDown. Angle went for a German before the bell even rung and got a two count, as Ross says it was a forcible entry by Kurt Angle. There was a belly-to-belly by Angle, ducked a Van Dam kick, hit two consecutive Germans, and then Van Dam runs at him into the corner and went for a rolling thunder, but Angle was right next to the ropes, so Van Dam had no choice but to land on the ropes as he was trying to land the rolling thunder. There was a spin kick. They went to the floor. Angle was hitting to the steps. Van Dam then climbed on top, hit a rider kick, but Tim White was pulled in front, so he took out the referee with the kick. And then Angle hits an angle slam, applies the ankle lock, but the bell is rung at 2:55. Basically an Iron Man match on this show. And Angle is disqualified for pulling Tim White in front of Van Dam. Edge then runs in, attacks Angle, hits him with a belly-to-belly, but then Kurt leapfrogs Edge, avoiding the spear, hits a German to Edge. Angle slam is blocked, and then finally Edge spears him and has to be pulled off by officials. And this would be a feud that would continue on SmackDown. And they had a pair of great matches at both the Backlash and then the Hair match at Judgment Day in May. And this was a really good feud, I thought, for Edge's career.
Yeah, certainly you got the sense that Edge was one of the company's big projects at the time. They gave him the King of the Ring, gave him the Rob Zombie theme, and I think he was at this point progressing well as a babyface, but really wouldn't hit that main event slot until his heel run.
Which is 3 years after, 3+ years after this point, which is kind of amazing. I mean, granted, he missed a year there with his neck, but nonetheless, he was on his way.
He's just
kind
of a vanilla babyface.
Yeah, really. He was at that point. I mean, that's that fall period on SmackDown was a really big, he was a big part of that as well.
Yeah.
Stephanie's in the back, and Michael Cole speaks to her, says she is not going anywhere. She's going to be on both brands because after tonight, she will be the undisputed champion. And that takes us to our main event, Triple H, Chris Jericho, and Stephanie for the title. This is the same arena where Chris Jericho pinned Triple H on that episode of Raw in 2000 with the Phantom title switch. And there was a group of fans with signs, with each one with one word on them that said, Triple H looks that damn good.
Wow. Okay.
If you're going to a wrestling event, that what other statement do you want to send to the world?
Triple H looks that damn good.
So if it was three H's on one of the signs.
Oh, gotcha.
Stephanie said that she was... They brought up the story here that Stephanie lied to Hunter about having a baby as a heel tactic. Yeah. I don't remember this storyline, but I'm sure
it
happened.
She was pregnant, and then they were set to get married.
And it was not a real pregnancy. Is that how it's worked out?
Yeah.
I can't remember that build-up to that wonderful storyline of Hunter and Jericho pre-WrestleMania. Hunter, he looked like he was an extra planet in the solar system. He was so large.
Yeah, he looked like the Michelin Man here.
He was... if there were initials for him, if he was a VHS tape, he would definitely be SP, the initials of our award winner.
Ah, yes.
Gotcha. Sorry, that was pretty long.
No. I got it.
Make him work for the reference. Stephanie is just watching at the start of the match, and then as Hunter is thrown to the floor, lays down for Jericho, and Hunter has to pull Jericho off. As Hunter went for Stephanie and grabbed her for the pedigree, this crowd went nuts.
I really liked... I mean, I think throughout the match, Jericho and all three of them really worked well at conveying the psychology of the match. Here, you look at on paper how ridiculous this match is, but you kind of, and when it starts, you see that Jericho and Stephanie's tactic is to let Jericho pin Stephanie. And Triple H's goal the entire time is to make sure that this doesn't happen, so he has to always ensure that these two are kept separate from one another.
Jim Ross notes that he himself is not eligible in the draft, says he has not been in a draft since Vietnam, to which Jerry Lawler says, yeah, I heard you were shot at by both sides. There is a slingshot that sent Jericho into Stephanie in the corner, so Jericho falls down, and we got the Ric Flair sting spot where Stephanie fell into Jericho's crotch, and Jericho then attacked the quad of Hunter when he recovered. Stephanie joined in on the fun. Tons of heat for this.
Yeah.
There was a kick that sent Jericho into Stephanie, and then Stephanie slapped Jericho. Jericho pie-faced Stephanie, missed the lion salt on Hunter, and then places Stephanie into the lion salt, and Hunter...
No.
Sorry, what did I
Jericho,
screw up here?
So the two of them are shoving each other, but then Steph tells Jericho, hey, what are we doing here? We're supposed to be working together. So Jericho attempts the lion salt, misses, and at this point, Stephanie jumps over and tries to pin Jericho.
And then Jericho applies the walls to Stephanie, right?
Somebody, yes.
Because Hunter attacked him from behind, and it was the identical spot how he tore his quad, breaking up the walls with Stephanie in it. Jericho gets sent to the floor. Hunter's now alone with Stephanie, and he calls for the pedigree, and Jericho stops him with a missile dropkick. Jericho then goes for a chair. Earl Hebner grabs the chair, and we get a double belt shot because this was when we had the WWF title and the WCW title, and each clocked the other, and they're both down, and Stephanie emerges from the dead. The reaction from the crowd, this was the one tease where they actually believe Stephanie could win the title. And she went for pins to both guys and each kicked out. I thought this was a great spot.
Yeah.
They teased the thing that they were fearing in this match. They totally bought into the idea Stephanie could win this.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter then clotheslines Stephanie. Jericho gets the walls applied to Hunter, and he gets out. hits a pedigree, Stephanie breaks up the cover, and now with Jericho out, Hunter grabs her, hits a spinebuster, and he pins Stephanie. This thing went about 8 minutes. There was so much heat in this match. Lawler is devastated because Stephanie is now gone until July.
That was a stipulation.
Yes, that she
Stephanie
would
be gone from the WWF, not just till July, but yes.
I will guarantee, I can't remember, but I probably hated the idea of this match when it was probably announced. I love this match, watching it. This told a great story. This crowd loved it. I think this was the best thing on this show.
I did too.
This was great.
Yeah.
This crowd was so awesome. It was such an easy story, and everyone bought in that Stephanie, they had the idea of a stupid Vince Russo title win. Only they did this the right way. They teased it with her ultimately falling. And when Stephanie has her rare comeuppance, she sells it as good as anyone. She was being dragged away by the officials, like she was being brought to prison.
Mm-hmm. The match far exceeded my expectations. I mean, I thought, considering the very effective use of this non-wrestler in Stephanie McMahon, who I thought was tremendous in the role, I think it was a lot of fun and told a really good story with the psychology of all the characters in this ridiculous situation all being very sound. I think there were some great teases of Stephanie nearly winning, and this ultimately capped off the Stephanie Triple H feud that had lasted several months. I would say, maybe the unfortunate part of it is that it the whole thing made Jericho seem like an afterthought to Stephanie as a lead heel here, and that was sort of the criticism of his entire heel Undisputed Championship reign, unfortunately. But you look at this match and you look at it on paper and you look at the outcome, and I don't think anybody can really complain, because it definitely was a fun match to end what was, I thought, a fun high stakes edition of Raw.
Yeah, Stephanie's trying to crawl under the ring, holding onto the post as she is banished, and Hunter sings goodbye to end the show. One takeaway that I look back at this period in time, especially taking into consideration the fact that Austin would leave in June and not come back until the next year. We talked about the reaction Hunter got at the King of the Ring, where business was at this time. Even Hunter on this show, I know this guy, he just wanted to be that next big heel. He loved Ric Flair and Harley Race. I really feel this guy, momentum would suggest, had a much longer run in him as the top babyface on Raw.
You think so? You think
that heel to me, Hunter as the heel champion in late 2002, all throughout 2003, I mean, that to me was not a great period. He had some great opponents and stuff with Shawn Michaels and Benoit, but it was, to me, Raw was not a truly great show in 2002-03.
I definitely agree that he shouldn't have dropped the belt to Hulk Hogan, and probably not that quick.
Yes.
I probably would have done away with that Hogan championship run entirely. I don't think Hunter was a great babyface, though. I don't think he was a great top babyface. I felt like at this time, he was certainly connecting with the crowd, but he didn't feel like he was living up to the potential of the performer that Triple H is as a babyface. He just didn't work as well for me. But I do agree that he probably could have ran a little bit longer with it.
I'm not saying exactly. I'm not saying he never could have turned. Certainly the circumstances for that Shawn Michaels match, you wanted to I don't think they necessarily had to do that match. I mean, in hindsight, it was an excellent match. But I just look at, you didn't have that big, The Rock left, Austin was gone. You needed that big babyface star, and this guy was the ultimate, to a lot of people, he was a super over babyface. Because he was just as badass at the time, and he was coming off that quad injury where it was the most sympathy anyone had for Hunter at this time, who didn't tend to show a ton of vulnerability prior to that. I just think you could have got a lot out of it, and instead it was him as a top heel. And that wasn't, to me, the greatest Raw period in 2002 and 2003. I mean, look at some of those programs.
The Raw itself was just bad. The show itself was just bad.
Yeah. Well, this was the kickoff to the draft. On a scale of 1 to 10, Way.
For this episode of Raw, I give this an 8. I thought it was a really entertaining episode of Raw. I thought Vince and Ric Flair played their roles very well. Every segment had a hook. Every time you had a draft pick, it felt like it was a big deal. And I love the two main matches on the show, those being even the Rock Hogan match. Actually, three matches on the show I thought were really good. The Rock Hogan NWO match, the RVD Angle match was good for the time that it had, and I thought the main event was tremendous. Maybe the best Stephanie match that I've ever seen.
I put this one was booked well. She also had that really good Trish match the year prior on the pay-per-view, the No Way Out show. But this was, I give the show a 7, and I enjoyed the main event a lot. These were the draft lottery results. I'll read off who Raw got first, and then we'll do SmackDown. After Lita's pick, we got Brad, and these were all, I guess, random, because it was a lottery. Bradshaw, Steven Richards.
Sorry, this is Raw?
This is Raw. Bradshaw, Steven Richards, Matt Hardy, Raven, Jeff Hardy, Mr. Perfect, Spike Dudley, D'Lo Brown, Sean Stasiak, Terry, Jacqueline, Goldust, Trish Stratus, the 46th pick, Just Incredible, Big Boss Man, Tommy Dreamer, Crash Holly, and Mighty Molly.
Really a shame that they did the Hardy split just like that.
They didn't. They were both on Raw.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So how did Matt get?
It was just
put over.
Luck of the draw.
Oh.
And then SmackDown had Billy Kidman, followed by Tajiri, meaning the cruiserweight title went to SmackDown, Chris Jericho, Ivory, Albert, Hurricane, Al Snow, Lance Storm, DDP, Tori Wilson, Scotty Too Hotty, Stacy Keebler, Christian, Test, Farouk, Taz, Hardcore Holly, Val Venus, and the last pick overall at number 57, Perry Saturn. That was your first ever draft. I think certainly if you compare the two, SmackDown appeared to have the much more interesting roster.
Sure. I mean, yeah.
Maybe not.
I don't know. It depends what you're looking for.
As a fan way, and you look at Rock, Angle, Benoit, Hogan, Edge.
Yeah.
Those are your top picks against The Undertaker, NWO, Kane, Van Damme, Booker, Big Show, Bubba,
sure,
and Brock.
But they also had Austin.
They would get Austin, yeah, though that wasn't known on this night. But you're right. And that was, obviously, you had to separate Austin and Rock. I think that was pretty much guaranteed. But the funny part would be that by the end of the summer, both of those men would be gone.
Mm.
So now we head to the feedback, and let's see what you all had to say about this edition of Raw from 2002. And we're going to start off with Mick Whalen. As far as the matches go, this Raw was just forgettable, but the draft is where the real action was. The main problem with the draft initially was that Raw was clearly the weaker show, as SmackDown got a noticeably better crop of wrestlers at the start. The next problem was that the draft was rendered moot within a few months. The Rock and Hogan would leave, Taker, Big Show, Eddie, and Brock would go to SmackDown. That's right, Eddie would also show up the following week on Raw.
Yes.
So Austin and Eddie would go to Raw. They would even it out a lot more. Benoit was there for a little bit. Jericho ended up getting moved to Raw.
Some fine-tuning.
Definitely.
After.
Then we continue on. The NWO vanished. The Dudleys would reunite. And Triple H, Jericho, Christian, and Lance all went to Raw to shore up the star power. Aside from the draft itself, the show had nothing else going for it. All the matches were way too short, except for the main event, which was weak. But for historical reasons, this Raw is okay. I give this Raw 4 out of 10. Maybe you and I were the ones that enjoyed the main event more than others.
We got a Kai who says, I think the problem with the original draft will be the same as this year's, as in after the first five or so draws, it really doesn't matter that much. You get through some of the big stars at the start, and then you might as well be picking randomly. It also hurts that this draw didn't mean that much by the end of the year, as mentioned by McWhalen above. I will say that one thing I really liked and hope they do this year is actually have the two owners pick their drafts. It became rather silly in years after where it was all done randomly. I also liked how Rick and Vince had war rooms for this show. Did they go the extra mile to make this draft feel like a big deal? They did go the extra mile to make this draft feel like a big deal, which was the right move in my view.
What did you think how this was handled with the picks and then into the lottery? Would you like to see this next week replicated, or what changes would you prefer?
I think I would. I think these are good opportunities to really promote your surprise stars. I think there's a pecking order anyway that exists in fans' minds. You might as well just kind of take advantage of that and give them some surprises for some surprise picks like a Nakamura or a Finn Balor up there.
John from Indianapolis. The problem with this draft wasn't just the fact that teams were randomly broken up in the failed endeavor to build new talent, but the manner the draft itself was handled. In a typical sports draft, teams either wait their turn to make a selection or work out deals with the other teams to get a higher or lower pick. While the latter wasn't likely to happen at all, given how Vince and Rick hated each other in the storyline, it sort of defeats the point of a draft to have guys just wander up to the podium and randomly say, oh, it's not my pick yet, but I want to take this guy. Plus, the entire NWO was drafted with one of the picks. My question to you guys is the fact that I expect this draft to focus on 10 to 16 performers during the live broadcast and the remaining talent to be dispersed online. Obviously, this sort of hurts your undercard because it shows irrelevancy, but I wonder if the WWE should try to make a bigger deal in the undercard draft picks instead of just randomly announcing 20 guys taken in some supplemental draft. Obviously, nobody cares about the shining stars or the molten poop. But it's more about your Baron Corbin, Zack Ryders, and Apollo Crews. I don't know how much different it's going to be quite honest. I think certainly with, watching this show in a two-hour format, they formatted it to have 20 picks, mm-hmm. which is the same time frame you're working in here. And even this format, I mean, they were rapid-fire picking to just get through picks at some points.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a way to work around that. You have so many guys on the roster, you can't really give everybody equal time. And how would they... I think they should definitely try to make a bigger presentation now that they have the network to actually make a full show of it, have Renee host it, whatever. Do like a nicer, nicely presented show rather than just have a list appear on the website. I think that it'd be a good way to get people to watch the network, first of all, and I think it would treat the undercard with a bit more importance, but in the end, it's still the undercard.
It's an interesting dilemma they have, because part of this, the time slot they have on SmackDown, is a lead-in for that new show, Shooter,
yes.
on the USA Network. And the WWE, it's designed to give a really big audience for that debut.
Yeah.
And at the same time promoting something else on their network. But it's a sound idea to do. On top of that, I think Monday's Raw, rather than a coin toss, there should be some kind of structure on the show where Stephanie or Shane, there's some contest to get the first pick.
I totally agree. Absolutely agree. And instead of a coin toss, I guess they could go the route of a match. Or
you could have a show-long,
yeah,
almost like something set up, like that's a show-long storyline, and
yes.
it culminates in a match or something, and they each have a representative, and somehow they get the first pick.
Yeah, I love that.
Can create alliances, too, that Shane tells his guy, hey, if you win this match, you will be my pick.
I also like the idea of trading drafts, too,
like picks?
Like, yeah, trading picks as well. It seems like something they could play around with, but maybe it'd be a bit confusing. Is it my turn?
I think so.
We go to Jesse from The Six, who says, I've never seen this episode of Raw before. I think I watched WrestleMania 18 and then stopped immediately for a few years, a development that many have considered with getting my first high school girlfriend. Having never seen this before, you can imagine my astonishment at the beginning when Linda announced a triple threat match of Hunter Jericho and Stephanie McMahon. What? The other thing that struck me, apart from Flair looking 30 years younger and Rock looking 100 pounds lighter, was the storyline awfulness of Vince McMahon and Flair's picks. Of Vince's first three picks, Rock would basically leave the company for a decade by the end of the summer, and Benoit would just show up on Raw upon his return with no explanation given. Of Flair's first three picks, Taker would basically spend the entire brand split with SmackDown, and the NWO would dissolve after an underwhelming few months. The network really should have just used Real American for Hogan instead of the generic guitar instrumental. And I hope John once again noted how much he loved Christian's theme.
The Taker thing was weird because he won the title, and then when he lost the title, I can't remember how they explained it. But then you're right. He just ended up on SmackDown despite being drafted to Raw.
He must have been traded for somebody.
I can't remember how they explained it. Maybe someone on the message board can refresh our memories. But it also, with Hunter, he also ended up a SmackDown guy after losing the title to Hogan.
Yes, and I believe he was traded for, like, Jericho and... Or maybe with Jericho for somebody? I don't know.
You might be right. And then the last one here is Andrew from Michigan. At the time of the draft, I only watched Raw, so I remember really caring about who ended up there. I was disappointed that Edge was put on SmackDown since he was my favorite wrestler. I began watching SmackDown after the draft, but Raw has always remained my main focus. I stopped watching SmackDown after a few years, but it looks like I may have to start up again soon.
My favorite moment on the show was the "You Are an Asshole" chant that Rock got started. My question, with Raw being 3 hours with a split roster, it sounds like torture. Do you expect the show to get worse after the split?
Yes. Yes, I do.
You're optimistic about it getting worse.
I think Raw will be worse. SmackDown will definitely be better, but in order for one show to get better, I think the other one has to get a little worse, and I think that'll be Raw with 3 hours.
Like, I really think that I know so much focus is going to be on SmackDown and reinventing that show, but to me, it's you don't need to be giving fans any reasons to stop watching Raw because they are looking at them. I think it's loyalty that has kept them watching that show every week.
Fans won't stop watching Raw. At this point, Raw is a habit. You know, for at least if you're a longtime wrestling fan, you know Monday nights, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, whatever, you're going to watch wrestling. You have that internal clock. I think we've all got set. SmackDown is a little bit tougher.
I think those fans, they decrease each year.
Sure. But I feel like if you're a fan watching SmackDown, you're likely watching Raw as well, in my opinion.
Well, we'll find out. I just hope that, you know, after this past week's show, it very much felt like, man, SmackDown is the shiny new toy that's going to have all this interesting stuff to watch. And you need to do that. But at the same time, you kind of have to solidify Raw that, hey, it's going to be dynamic in its own way,
yeah,
and not just positioning it as Stephanie's heel brand that's kind of not with the times as Shane's is evolving.
Mm.
That's how it was left with you on Monday.
Do you feel like they should stagger kind of the depth of the roster more towards Raw because it has an extra hour that it needs to fill?
I would certainly argue that. It needs that depth. I mean, you're taking equal rosters and you need to produce an extra hour on Raw, which means, you know, you want to have that top of the hour attraction for three of them on Raw as opposed to two on SmackDown. So I think that there is, you know, as much as you can focus SmackDown on, I think it's another argument about a lot of call-ups potentially for NXT because you don't have the bodies. Mm-hmm. And maybe some nostalgia as well, bringing back some names and putting them on both shows.
What happens to Superstars?
Superstars the show?
Yeah.
Oh, one of those mysterious questions. Well, back here, I mean, they separated
after Burn.
Well, they had Metal at this time, I think.
Yeah, Metal.
They split up those B shows.
Velocity.
Yeah, I can't remember all the different...
But yeah, who gets Superstars? Oh, that's what I want to know.
Maybe that'll get drafted on its own. It'll be a recap of both shows. All right. Are you ready for our announcement?
Yes.
Next week on the show, what did we agree on?
First of all, next week, as we mentioned on Review Raw, we will be doing a review of the live SmackDown Live draft. So you can tune in for that. And then because that show will fall on a Tuesday night / Wednesday morning, that means we'll probably move Review Away next week to Friday.
Correct.
And perhaps going forward, we're still going to kind of play around with the idea, but I think perhaps going forward we will do Review Away on Fridays in a different capacity. But at least for the time being, we're going to experiment and try to do both brands' reviews. We're going to do a Review Raw on Tuesday, Review SmackDown going forward Wednesday.
Do you have any preference on what we review next week?
Well, I think the Scott Hall DVD has been getting a lot of buzz.
Okay.
I know you have a copy of it, so it's something I like to watch. Let's do that.
All right, we are going to review, so it'll be a week Friday.
Oh my God, a lot of reviews next week.
Get ready.
Yeah.
It'll be a wide range. Maybe Scott Hall, I haven't seen the documentary, maybe he will talk about being drafted as part of a package with Ric Flair's second pick on Raw in 2002. So we'll review the documentary of the new Scott Hall DVD, and we will come up with some idea for that show because we have some more copies of it, and we'll do a giveaway.
So again, that'll be Friday for Review Away. Wednesday will be Review of SmackDown Live.
So I have another announcement to make.
Oh. One I don't know about.
I did not tell Way about this. This is my swerve thrown to you.
Okay.
Monday, it's Review a Raw. We're going to review the final Raw before the draft. So on the eve of the draft, after we review Raw, me and Way are going to do a fantasy draft.
Okay. Cool.
Way, because you wear that red hat all of the time, yeah. You are going to be Raw. I'm going to be SmackDown. And you and I are going to draft 20 people, 10 each, back and forth. I'm going to put some criteria in there.
Okay.
There has to be a minimum of one woman drafted and one NXT performer drafted in there.
Sure.
And you're not going to know my picks, and I'm not going to know yours.
Wait a second. So we're not doing an ordered draft? We're just going to pick our own guys?
No, I'm saying we will do a coin toss.
Back and forth.
Yeah, we'll go back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will be picks. Okay. So you better start doing your research, Wade. Your goal here, you are the real-life GM of Raw. Uh-huh. And you have to think of television ratings, social media metrics. And yeah. Way, I want you to try and stab me in the back or slit my throat.
Okay, and in the end, we will compare to see who has the better roster.
Well, that is where the listeners of Reviewer Raw are going to give their feedback on who drafted the better roster.
I like that.
So that is Monday's Reviewer Raw.
Cool. I'm excited for that.
I gave this one some thought. So start researching, Way.
Cool.
So there you have it, folks. That is going to wrap it up for Review Away. We will be back. Well, we're going to be back many times next week.
Yeah.
So tune in later on this week. I'll have a new edition of the MMA report out. What's Next will also be out on Thursday. And I believe they'll be touching upon episode one of the Cruiserweight Classic that Braden will be weighing in on. And then Bauer and Pollock Friday, The Law Sunday night at 11 Eastern time, Review a Raw on Monday, and then next Tuesday, Review a SmackDown Live.
Tuesday night. Yes.
Tuesday night.
Review a SmackDown Live. I don't. We're not. We're,
wait, wait, wait. What's the acronym of that?
RASDL.
RASL. Rassle.
All right. Yes. Yes.
All right.
Of course.
I'm hearing the buzzing in my head, which is my sign to wrap things up. So we will chat with you later on. Go to liveaudiowrestling.com, and we'll speak with you later.
Proctologist convention.